Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, Space Force, my favorite comment so far on the Do We Need Space Force is, will the aliens and Martians be the ones paying for Space Force? Very good question. I guess we've got as good a chance of the aliens and Martians paying for Space Force as we do of the Mexicans paying for the wall. So, well, just throw it into the wish and hope category, or at least into the hand where you're wishing, because the other one will fill up full of, well, is what it is. But there you go. Space Force. Cannot wait for Space Force. Anyway, lots going on. The Gates trial, the Manafort trial. Gates wrapped up his testimony. Here to talk a little bit about what's going on all around that with the guy with the ostrich coat and the satin panties. I've asked our good friend Sarah Kendzior to come back and share some thoughts. Writer, journalist, and also the co-host of a great, fabulous podcast, Gaslit Nation. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, let's start with Space Force. Are you excited? Space Force!
Oh, God. I feel like, you know, I get stupider as I even try to discuss this. I mean, I've got nothing to say. You know, I just kind of look at all of the problems that we've been discussing for decades. You know, like, how do you fund healthcare? How do you fund school? I mean, it's a rote commentary of, like, obviously, if you have the money for a goddamn Space Force, you can pay for basic things. But, you know, and of course, that's not what they're choosing to do. And I think that there's probably a bit more to it than that, given the way that they move money through various kind of schemes and operations in order to cover up corruption. And I have a feeling it has to go along with that. But Jesus yeah. Christ.
From our pocket yeah. to theirs, most certainly. But, you know, the thing is they've been kind of laying the groundwork here, because the Chinese now have this, you know, this subsonic aircraft that they just, you know, just claimed the other day, you know, they're far ahead of us and we got to catch up. So it's the next way to rob us blind. And to not
yeah,
make us ask for things.
Yeah, it's robbing us blind. And, you know, the other thing I do worry about, because it is Trump and it's Russia, and, you know, Trump works against American interests, is, you know, who will control satellites, whether this is a way to stage some sort of attack. You know, it's a very, I think, unusual situation that we have a president who seems completely willing and sometimes enthusiastic to attack our institutions and possibly our own citizens, to bring the country down, to strip it down for parts. I mean, that's what they've been steadily doing in other capacities. This would be rather dramatic. I didn't necessarily expect this strategy to extend to outer space, but this is Trump. You know, I'm sort of curious what Gingrich, his friend, you know, has to say on this with his moon colony obsession and whatnot. And oh my God, I swear to God, seriously, I'm getting stupider as we're talking about this. Like, I can feel it. So
we're
I don't know.
Literally going further down the rabbit hole is what you're saying.
You know, I listen to myself and I'm just like, you know, build something else that's like a sci-fi thing. Build like a time machine so I can like get out of this conversation and travel back to like a normal one. But anyway.
All right. So good. Well, then since this has taken us down, let's get to the Manafort trial. Anything surprising in this? I'll tell you the one thing that surprised me. The fact that, you know, because we've been told, we've been led to believe that Manafort is this kind of thug. The allegations that he's had people killed, all of this stuff. And to find out that Rick Gates was actually stealing from him was quite comical to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think Manafort is a thug. Manafort is a murderer. Manafort is a scumbag. And one who's, you know, experienced and good at it. It doesn't mean that he's going to be on the ball with everything. And I think that they have a different sort of sense of money. You know, it's not about making money in terms of having, you know, wealth that you can inherit and pass down through generations and invest in a sort of traditional thing. It's about having leverage. It's about having power. You know, both Trump and Manafort were groomed by Roy Cohn, you know, as I've mentioned many times in this show, whose dream in life, which he fulfilled, was to die in massive debt to the government and to get away with all of these great financial fraud schemes, to sort of just pull one over on people and not get caught. You know, Manafort, of course, got caught, but I'm not surprised that he also sort of, in certain ways, got screwed over in the process, went into debt in the process. You know, but I think it's sort of, you have to view how they, you know, how they work with finances differently. And yeah, it was also interesting to see the clothing selection and the fact that that jacket makes him look like a geriatric member of New Kids on the Block. But that said, yeah, interesting trial.
Now, if you wore that with the silk trousers, that would be you kind of look like a 1970s pimp then.
Oh, God, man, you know, real sexy. It's like, you know, we've suffered enough as a nation. Like, I didn't need to see all that. Like, I've been through too much. You know what I mean? There's a limit for me, and I think I've hit it. But, yeah.
But at some point, you need the comedy. I mean, at some point, you need the laugh. And look, you know, Space Force today for me was that laugh. I needed to go, you know what? Now we've jumped the shark.
You ask me about Space Force, I, like, lose my shit on the show. I have to stop talking about it. It's just like, where are we going with this? Anyway, yeah, Space Force.
No, I mean, for me, it was kind of like, now we've officially jumped the shark. I mean, not...
Well, you know, you have these moments where you're just like, you know, President Donald Trump, secret Kremlin asset, has now created a Space Force. And you're just like, you know, it's just like a Mad Lib constructed by like a drug-addled six-year-old in like 1991. Like, you're just like, what's going on? I mean, and I'm someone, of course, you know, somewhat knows what's going on. That's why I'm on your show. You know, I follow this on a day-to-day level, and every now and again there's just something that hits me and I can't quite you know, grasp that this is an ongoing reality that, you know, my children will have to contend with, and my grandchildren, if there is, you know, an Earth to inhabit. We're not, you know, living out, I guess, in Space Force territory. So yeah, interesting time.
Yeah, big fun. And, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is, you know, I'm watching this Manafort trial, and, you know, it's kind of boring, to be honest. It's accountants, and it's, you know, it's math, and it's basically just tax evasion, which, look, we knew.
Yeah, I mean, this particular trial, you know, is oriented toward that, and I think Gates' testimony is, you know, going to be oriented toward that because of the nature of the charges. I'll be surprised if this is the limit of the charges brought against Manafort, both by Mueller and probably charges at the state level. And I think that we're going to be looking at something well beyond financial crimes. You know, he has been indicted for conspiracy against the United States. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more that's directly involving the 2016 campaign. You know, those ties are already being built, you know, to the public, even though these charges are, you know, on a somewhat related but distinct manner. I think that they're trying to kind of build this case. I mean, it's blindingly obvious to anybody who's, like, followed the news about Manafort or knows, you know, the most basic stuff about his life, that these two things, you know, his mafia ties, his financial dealings, his debt, his relationship with oligarchs, and Trump's campaign and his role as Trump's voluntary campaign manager, you know, are obviously connected and should, you know, bring down Trump. I mean, when you have everyone in Trump's inner circle either getting indicted or under suspicion, and of course today we had an associate of Roger Stone's served apparently with a subpoena from Mueller. It's Randy Credico, had previously been served with a subpoena from the House committee, and it fled the Fifth. He's now back in there. They're going into the, some characters from the Elliot Spitzer saga that were also involved with Stone. You know, Kristen Davis, the madam from New York, she's being subpoenaed. And all these people are coming in. So it's kind of obvious what Mueller's doing. You know, in it, the scope is very wide. The evidence is vast, and it seems to be a very multifaceted, layered crime circle. But as I've said repeatedly, I'm not sure we have the time to really, you know, investigate this to the degree without enormous damage taking place at the federal level at the same time. It's like, as all this is going on, we still have kids who are separated from their parents. We have them doing things like passing laws that want to bring asbestos back. I mean, it's just like anything that can hurt the ordinary American citizen, they are doing, and they're pursuing it with such aggression and such speed, and that speed is not matched by the Mueller team. And you could kind of argue, okay, that's not Mueller's job, but I feel like it's kind of his duty. It's kind of his obligation, because if you have common sense, you know, you're going to see how many people are going to be hurt if this doesn't move along a little bit faster, because the damage done already is just incalculable.
Is it possible this is all designed solely to flip Manafort so that all that stuff can happen? Because, you know, there's part of me that goes, look, if he does go away for these charges, it's going to be for a very long time. And I don't see him as a guy who's willing to fall on the sword, which is why I remember the tweet that Trump put out, comparing the treatment of Manafort to Alphonse Capone, which I don't think I've ever heard him referred to as Alphonse.
I don't think Trump wrote that tweet at all. And I'm kind of curious who did, because, yeah, he would never say Alphonse Capone. I mean, he would say Al Capone. And I felt like, you know, someone was trying to send a message with that tweet, perhaps to Manafort's legal team. I don't know. I thought it was a strange one, even by the Trump, kind of ghostwriter tweet standards. You know, every now and again, it's very obvious when someone else is writing the tweets. Either they're doing something gracious and generous of human spirit, which obviously is not Trump, or they're writing weird-ass shit about, great cities of Moscow and these kind of poetic grand terms that I also think are not Trump, and I also think are messages of some kind, those tweets still bear reexamination. Yeah, I mean, in terms of Manafort, I still don't think he'll flip. I've never thought he was going to flip. I don't think it's necessary for him to flip, because there's so much evidence. And, you know, among the most striking evidence is that which Trump himself has put into the public domain by repeatedly confessing to his own crimes.
Right.
You know, he's confessed to obstruction of justice. He's confessed to collusion, or just said, it's cool to collude with the Russians. Yes, I met with the Russians. And he lied about that originally. He said it was about adoption. Now he's saying, yeah, we were trying to get dirt on Clinton from a hostile foreign state. And, and from there you can go into emoluments, you can go into all kinds of things. With Kushner, you can get him out just by virtue of his security clearance lies alone. And those are the most dangerous people. I mean, those are the ones that I'm kind of concentrating on. Trump, Kushner, Sessions. Pence is dirty too and dangerous and needs to be out. He's a little bit of a tougher target, although we should always remember, as the Manafort trial keeps going, that Manafort selected Pence. He was very invested in getting Pence in there, and so I think it would be worth looking into why exactly that was.
Good point. You brought up the Trump meeting. Now we find out that there was potentially a second meeting before, or a first meeting before the first meeting. Any thoughts on that?
God, maybe I haven't heard about this. I've been like...
They're saying that there was a meeting before the June 9th, the Trump Tower meeting with the Russian lawyer. Evidently, there was a meeting before that, 2 days before.
That would make sense given, some of the comments that Donald Trump Jr. made in the emails, where he certainly didn't sound surprised by any of this, so I'd have to relook at the dates of those emails. I mean, I feel like the idea that this has not been in the works for years is kind of false. That, like, one day in 2016, Kremlin people and oligarchs, these are people, of course, have known Trump and Manafort and Stone personally for decades, suddenly came out and said, hey, you guys, we can help. I do not think it was this sort of random thing that started to happen in 2016. I think perhaps the investigation maybe picked up Russian mafia activity and its relationship to the Trump campaign at around that time. I mean, when you hire Paul Manafort as your campaign manager, that's what happens. But I think these ties go back a long time. We know that, for example, Felix Sater and Michael Cohen were emailing each other back in 2015 saying, they were going to get Trump in office and Russia was going to help. And it's like, there are lots of statements like that. There's Trump's own interview in 2014 where he said Russia is going to help with something and, we're not going to object to it. And, he obviously was thinking of a presidential run at that point. He had just run before in 2012. He's repeatedly run. And so, the idea of them having other meetings, I definitely think they had other meetings. I just don't think that they began in 2016. I think a number of different individuals had been meeting for a long time. I mean, other examples, of course, are the RT Gala that was held in December of 2015, which Jill Stein went to, Michael Flynn went to. At the same time, Sheriff Clark was over in Russia in that same month in December 2015. We had the NRA's involvement going back there. So, you know, these guys were all talking to each other. And so another meeting in Trump Tower, I just see it as like one more item on a very long list.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are saying that maybe the plan was hatched even as far back as 2013 when Trump was in Moscow for the Miss Universe pageant.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the plan as a sort of, you know, an ideal, something that they'd ultimately want to achieve, both Trump getting into power, Manafort and his Russian oligarch mafia connections wanting to benefit from this arrangement, U.S. plutocrats wanting to benefit from it, that was always kind of around. And I think they were waiting in some sense for the right conditions. You know, Trump did run in 2012. I think they realized he wasn't going to win then. And I think you had a perfect storm brought about by 2016. And part of that was a storm they created through the manipulation of social media, both in terms of hacking, you know, voter databases, but also these propaganda campaigns and, you know, the weaponization of networks and technology that just didn't exist in 2012. Like in 2012, we weren't all walking around with smartphones in our pockets. People weren't on Facebook en masse. And when you have people locked in this technology, locked in these social media monopolies, it becomes easier to wage the kind of, you know, warfare that they did. And you also had a real deterioration of social and economic conditions during this time that, you know, was not caused by Russia. That was just happening within the United States, which they capitalized on. So I think they had a very, you know, ripe conditions to hatch this plot. I also think that had Hillary won and gotten into office, we'd be in the middle of impeachment hearings for her on baseless charges. We'd be in the middle of, you know, a zillion Charlottesville-like events. I don't think it would have gone smoothly because I think they really were very determined to do this. It was just a matter of which way, you know, they managed to achieve it.
No, I'm right there with you. I wanted to get your thoughts before I let you go on the Nunes tapes, on what's going on there.
Oh, God. I mean, with Nunes, it's really amazing to me that we've known how dirty Nunes was for such a long time. You know, back in March 2017 was when he had that kind of, you know, frantic, worried press conference where it looked like he was worried he would be held accountable for his complicity, you know, for the fact that he was acting as a lapdog instead of a watchdog in terms of oversight. And he's just there. You know, he's like another example of, you know, the audacity of, you know, the criminal, you know, flagrancy of how Trump and his lackeys behave. You know, I had some hope he might be removed from that committee or investigated in his own right, and he's just there wielding power over it. And you see this attitude, you know, all throughout the Republican Party. You see it with Kobach in Kansas. You know, you see it in other Republicans who basically want to control the law in order to break the law. You know, that's the goal. And they're not hiding that that's the goal anymore. I think that's why they've been relatively unconcerned about winning the midterms. That's their attitude. Their very cavalier, relaxed attitude toward that has alarmed me for a long time. So that's a pattern people need to watch out for. I think they, you know, people have this idea that, like, oh, the Republicans wouldn't do it so brazenly. You know, they're afraid that you'll notice. They're afraid they'll get caught. It's like, no, they're only afraid they'll get punished. They're not afraid of being caught anymore. They're not afraid of letting you know that this is not a democracy, or they don't want it to be a democracy anymore, that they openly want a one-party state through corruption that we can witness with our own eyes. And they don't care, because they just don't care about the public's opinion. And that's not how America is supposed to work.
No, I would argue we're already there. I mean, they've already been caught, and we're not punishing them. That's the problem.
Oh, God, yes, that's the problem. It drives me absolutely nuts. And that's, you know, and I know there's like a limited capacity for how they can be punished. You know, the Democrats don't have a majority. There's only so much they could do, although I still think they could be much more vocal about a lot of this. You know, some of them are, some of them aren't. But, you know, in terms of people who can indict these crimes, it's like you've got to do it quicker. You know, you've got to do it sooner, because the longer this goes on, you know, as you and I both been saying for a long time, the more entrenched it gets and the harder it is to get them out. You know, you have to undo the damage that they did, but also people start to shift their expectations of law, you know, of consequence, of repercussions. It starts to seem to people like, oh, this is just the way things are. And I've seen this an authoritarian state. You know, most of the states that I studied when I was studying the former Soviet Union had this attitude about corruption. It wasn't like people liked corruption. They absolutely hated it. You know, it was misery for them to live in that kind of state, but they also expected it. And so they were much less likely to kind of challenge it, you know, on a small scale, whether it's like, you know, an officer asking for a bribe, or on a large scale, like your president, you know, being your only president in history and constantly extending his term under illegal conditions. And it's so demoralizing. And so I really wish, you know, since we do have a legal system still, that can indict these people and get them out and show that there are consequences for these behavior, that they would use the tools they have before they don't have those tools anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the examples I used yesterday is your state of Missouri, where yesterday, and good on the voters there, they pushed back the whole the right to work nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, here's In the two instances where voters have been able to go to the polls and push back, at least in the last couple of years, overwhelmingly 2-1, voters have said, no, we don't want this kind of poison. Yet the Republicans continue to push it without any fear of, you know, just what you said, any fear of being held accountable at the ballot box.
Yes, and that's alarming because they should be afraid. I mean, you know, I live in Missouri, and I've yet to meet anyone, Democrat or Republican, you know, I don't know any hotshot Republican donors, so maybe that's my problem, that wanted a right to work. You know, everyone is against it. You could drive in any corner of the state and see signs against it. So this is something where you really have, you know, a unified population coming out, and I hope that Claire McCaskill takes advantage of this and, you know, highlights labor issues in her campaign, and also notes that it is Republican donors that are trying to screw over the American worker, you know, that are trying to back these kind of laws, including her opponent. You know, so I hope that that comes through. But yeah, you'd think that they would be pretty worried about that and pretty worried about all these special elections where Democrats are winning. Turnout is incredibly high. The turnout in the Missouri, you know, primary and special elections this week was just unbelievably high. You'd think they'd be a little more concerned, and they're not. No. And, you know, that's for the reasons that I brought up before, you know, whether there will be a hacking, or they'll just use the pretext of a hacking and say, oh, you know, the Democrats didn't really win. It was Russia hacking on their behalf, which is absolutely absurd. Those are all serious things that we may face down the line. And also, to plug the podcast, we're doing a special episode on election security, election integrity. It'll be the next one coming out, I think, in about 11 days. You know, we interviewed an expert on the topic. It went really well. So people should listen in for tips on what ordinary citizens can do, you know, to battle this kind of corruption.
I cannot wait for it. It's one of the things I look forward to. Sarah, well, keep up the great work. I appreciate the time, and I hope you'll come back again real soon and entertain us at least and inform us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks
back.
So much. Always great talking with you. Again, check out the podcast, Gaslit Nation. We'll make sure we get a link out so people can take a quick look at that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.